I'm Metal Mattson from Super Geeky Playdate, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network. Just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hey friends, Jordan Woods Robinson here from AMC's The Walking Dead and Blue Man Group, and this is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. We're a geek podcast for geek culture, so are you ready to get your geek on? Sit back, relax, grab some gluten-free non-GMO popcorn, and let's dive into the world pop culture bliss.
You're listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
All right, and welcome everyone. This is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. How is everybody doing? Oh my God, this is going to be an amazing show, Lindsay Badger.
I know. We haven't had a guest on in a long time, so I'm really excited.
I'm so excited. I just can't hide it. Can you hide it? I don't know.
I don't want to hide it.
I'm like shaking right now. I'm so excited.
I want to share it.
Look at this.
World.
I'm shaking right now. No, I'm just messing. So anyway, but if you're wondering where Mr. Austin Burke is, it's not his fault. So I want to say this right up front. There has been a major, and I'm talking major, Spectrum outage. Spectrum is obviously an internet service provider, and even Mike, our Mike here in the main window was affected by it earlier today, and the whole grid went down, a DNS block across multiple states. It's crazy. And of course, Austin was affected by that at college. And so he's not able to join us tonight. So I'm like, no. But he will be back. Yeah, he will be back, though. He's going to come back for our Blade Runner 2049 review coming up later in October. So we're pretty excited for that. But I'm not going to jaw jack too much. We're going to get right on into the show because we have a jam packed show today. Okay?
We do.
So, hey, everybody. Welcome. This is PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. I'm your host, Joseph Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. We'd like to welcome everyone joining us live here in the PopX.live chat room. Come hang out with us on our official website and have conversations at PopXcast.com. Now, if you missed last week's episode, episode number 62, and that was a pretty good one, I think. We got a lot of good reviews and hits on that one. Top 10 must-see underrated comic book films. Check out our official website, PopXcast.com, for this and other great shows from PopX.
I enjoyed last week's show.
It was fun, right?
It was good stuff. I even could have added a couple more onto that list, too, but, you know, 10 is 10.
We should have done, like, an honorable mention list. You know, some
we
of the ones
have.
That, yeah, I didn't even think about that. Shoot.
Maybe
we'll do a part two.
Maybe. I'm looking forward to it. Well, you guys, I am Lindsay Badger, your favorite geeky okie. And make sure that you head over to Google Play or iTunes after this show is over and click the subscribe button. Catch up on some amazing shows from the PopX archive. And while you're there, please show us some wonderful love by leaving us a 5-star rating and a review because we always appreciate.
We do, and I'm kind of enjoying the conversation right now. Darth Baca and Luke are having a conversation about Austin, and they're saying he's at band camp.
Oh, Austin's at band camp. You know that's where all the hotties go.
Well, I hear he likes to play the piccolo. I don't know.
Just the piccolo.
Maybe the recorder. I don't know. Oh, anything that has a reed on it and makes a noise, he'll toot it. That's for sure. All right. So anyway, dear Lord, baby Jesus, forgive me for that. We'll be right back. We're going to roll the news intro. Don't go nowhere. We got some great PopX news coming your way.
Extra, extra, read all about it. This is PopX News, coming to you live, right here on PopXcast.com.
It's almost as if I recorded that, but I digress. So, this week, leading off the top of the list, the CW revealed the title and key art for 2017's Arrowverse crossover event, and it's called Crisis on Earth X.
Whoa.
This is going to be
Bring
a big
it
one.
On.
This is going Bring to be a big one because on. Crisis on Infinite Earths and Crisis on Earth X, that's a huge DC crossover series, and it's going to include everything in the Arrowverse with all the heroes in town to celebrate Barry and Iris's wedding. Villains from Earth X crash the festivities with a deadly agenda. Now, the story will cross over between Supergirl, The Flash, DC's Legends of Tomorrow, and Arrow, and that will begin airing on November the 27th, 28th, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Time each night. So that is one you definitely want to watch back to back to back to back, and just go ahead and pop some popcorn and get ready, because that's going to be one heck of an event.
Forget the popcorn. I'm going to heat up my leftovers from Thanksgiving.
Right. Just, you know. Right.
Let's munch on some pumpkin pie and get our geek on with the Arrowverse, because right? I love when they do the crossovers, and I'm glad that they're continuing to do this.
They have made something
continue.
They have done something at CW that no other television show
Amazing.
Has ever done, because you've never heard of other shows crossing over with other shows. It just doesn't happen. Well, I mean, you know, you had Archie Bunker and the Jeffersons back in the day.
There was one other time that I could think of in the history of the CW, and this was back in the day, of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and their spinoff
Angel.
Of Angel. And they ran at the same time, and they did cross over a little bit, but not to the extent that they do with the Arrowverse series on this station. So
you are correct.
I approve of the crossovers. It keeps you engaged with all the storylines.
Couldn't agree more.
For sure. Well, guys, we're going to move on to the next bit of news. The love affair of Harley Quinn and the Joker isn't known for being docile. So when the DC Films brings the pair together in their own standalone, Margot Robbie believes it can only end in fire. Mm. During the interview, Robbie was asked how she felt about the DCEU's plans for Harley Quinn and the Joker film. And the Aussie actress had only good things to say. Their love story has to end in flames. It has to. It just wouldn't be right. I think people enjoy seeing these two characters who, in Harley and Joker's case, would die for one another. It's kind of a romantic in a messed up way, Robbie explained. So far, there has been very few details about the film. I like that. I like that she wants to see this go down in a wrecking ball of flames, because she's exactly right. That's the way they were meant to be.
And I think too, something that goes along with what you're saying here too, director of these DC films, Joff, he actually went on the record today on Twitter. I think it was just a couple of days ago. And he said that all the DC films in some way are going to be interlinked, interconnected, not to the extent of like how Marvel has done it. But a lot of people's been raising a lot of suspicion about Aquaman, because Aquaman takes place in a total different universe than Wonder Woman or the Justice League. So they're like, what's – and he's like, calm down. Everything is linked together. So if they're going to be doing – if they're going to be doing a Harley Quinn Joker film, it might not be Jared Leto playing Joker, but it's going to be along the same tones as we've already been introduced to before. So I'm pretty excited.
Can we please just level it up from Suicide Squad?
Yeah. Yeah. Suicide Squad was great. It's just the storyline was horrible.
Yeah. Can we just kick it up a notch?
All right. Now, speaking of DC, Injustice 2 players are reporting on social media late Tuesday night that the new patch for the game on the PlayStation 4 and Xbox is having an unintended and unpleasant side effect. I hope you're sitting down for this, because if you've updated, this is not going to be good. The loss of various data, including your gear, shaders, even abilities, and one or more of their own characters have been. So when you update, you lose pretty much like 80% of everything you worked hard for in the game to unlock. So the it's really crazy. Lost Items have apparently included the legendary and paid content as well, and in some cases, you lose all the abilities, all the custom outfits, everything. NetherRealm has issued a brief response to the situation, stating that we are aware that some players who downloaded the most recent Injustice 2 patch are missing gear they have earned. For those affected by the issue, please try to reboot the game after installing the patch. This should recover any gear before September 25th. Now, if you earned gear after September the 25th, that was not restored. The game team is still investigating the issue. Now, the update continued, we sincerely apologize for any inconvenience or frustration that has been caused, and we thank you for your patience. So it sounds like to me the patch did do some damage, but luckily the guys at Warner Brothers and NetherRealm, they've been doing backups, and so September 25th, that's only like 5 days away from that's not too bad, I don't think.
Can you imagine how many TVs were kicked in and remote controls were thrown and lots of swear words were dropped?
Here's the thing, Lindsay. I have Injustice 2, and I played it as recently as just a couple weeks ago before I got Marvel vs. Capcom, and I have, like, so much stuff unlocked. I have, like, exclusive Jay Garrick skins and just Reverse Flash and all these things I worked so hard and tirelessly to get. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so glad I didn't actually was a fool and play the game recently to erase everything. So hopefully...
Let's hope the next time you fire it up, all is well.
Oh,
fingers crossed, everybody. Everyone say a little prayer.
Say a little prayer for me.
Juju to all his right. PlayStation.
Let's move on.
All right. AMC has provided key art for the upcoming 7th season of Kevin Smith's comic book Men, revealing the show's October premiere date. The official synopsis for the season teases a number of geeky stars, including Marvel Netflix standouts Rosario Dawson and Mike Coulter, and TV's original Robin Burt Ward.
Wow.
That's cool.
Oh, that hits the heart right here. Adam West. Oh, man.
Yes, Burt Ward's going to make an appearance. That's amazing.
God bless him. All right, well, rounding up the last of the news headlines this week, Lucasfilm has teamed up with IBM for a new web series called Science and Star Wars, in which they use real-world science and technology to see how close they can match up to the advances in the Star Wars universe. Interesting. In the first episode, they tackle everyone's favorite laser sword, the lightsaber. Now, host Anthony Carboni teamed up with Star Wars Rebels voice actor Taylor Gray to make a version of a lightsaber that would work in real life and cut through solid steel. It all comes down to creating a source of heat hot enough to create plasma. Now, Carboni and Gray assemble what a thermatic lance made of carbon and steel tubing, steel wool, and a tank of oxygen. Now, once the device is put together, they use their homemade lightsaber to recreate an opening scene from Star Wars The Phantom Witches in Phantom Menace, in which Qui-Gon Jinn cuts through a steel door with his weapon. Now, this series will run exclusively on Facebook, but not a release date has been posted yet. And I actually got a little glimpse of this, they do stick the rod through steel, and they twist it around just like Qui-Gon did in the thing, and it literally melts the steel. It was awesome to see that. But
okay, I'm going to their Facebook page after this right now.
It's pretty nerdy. It's pretty nerdy, but
I'm all about this.
We want to know what you thought about, what do you think about this new web series over in the chat room? Drop us a line and let us know what you think. But also, as we round up, I'm going to do this week's PopX Hit It of the Week.
Now, you've got a huge Hit It.
I do. And I'm going to actually screen share this for all of our viewers out there as I go through this. And hopefully you guys can see what we're doing here. But this is going to be really cool. This is, I went to MegaCon this weekend over in Tampa Bay. And I had an amazing time and got to meet a couple of really cool people and took some really cool pictures of some amazing cosplays. And I'm going to share just a few with you right quick as we go through these. So here is one of the cool cosplays that I saw. This is Deadpool as Captain America. So it's like Captain and Deadpool got together.
Now, are these the same pictures that you shared on the PopX page this last
time? Some of them, yeah. There's some, okay. Some are there, but, so this is, immediately when I saw him, I had to get a picture because that is just one of the coolest mashups I've ever seen of a costume. Now the next up one we have here is, this is Batman. Now this is like Batfleck Batman, but this costume is 100% handmade. Mind blowing. The detail in this costume. Now, this is Snape from Harry Potter. I could not believe
he
how
looks
much
just like
doesn't
him.
He? It's insane.
Oh my
I couldn't
gosh,
believe it.
I was like,
yeah,
he could be like a double.
And he even sounded like I was. It was. Oh, it was eerie. It was eerie. So here's my father and I. We are standing in front of the 1989 Tim Burton Batmobile, and of course, I'm giving the old punch to the jaw there. And this is Dr. Stephen Strange. An amazing resemblance to Benedict Cumberbatch, might I add. Pretty awesome. Yeah.
Like an older version of Doctor Strange.
And of course, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but me and Dad are twinsies.
I did. I was like, oh my goodness, did your mama dress you up before you left?
Actually, I dressed my daddy up before we went, so.
It's so
but,
cute.
So we got captured by the Imperial stormtroopers here, and then we went over to the world of the Hobbit. And got to have some of the...
Did you tell the stormtroopers that you weren't the nerds they were looking for?
No, I didn't. I wish I would have, though.
Oh, you should have.
Yeah.
You
totally but should've. I think this family's Hobbit recreation is pretty good. I was, you know, from all the Lord of the Rings and stuff like that. A really great costume design here in this family. And, of course, last but not least, I got to meet the one, the only, Mr. William Shatner. And it was truly awesome to be able to meet him. And just hang out with him and talk with him just for, I know it was really brief and everything, but we had such a blast and just right real quick while I got you, you know, I just want to say that a lot of people give him a lot of crap because the way he portrays himself on social media and on television. I will say this, I met him in person and it's totally the opposite of everything that you would ever meet. He was truly humbling, first class all the way. And one of the things when I say that is my dad wanted to say something to him that was really special. And so my dad said, thank you, Mr. Shatner, for everything and just creating this world and your legacy. And Mr. Shatner looked back at him. He said, this pleasure is all mine. I love what I do. And I hope you enjoyed it. And it was just, I was like, what?
This guy on screen is one of your dad's heroes, basically.
Yeah.
And you know, your dad introduced you to the Star Trek world.
He
and
did.
This was kind of how you originally learned of the whole universe. So it's kind of a big monumental deal for both of you.
And it was pretty amazing. And, you know, it's humbling. How do I say this? I want to say this with a little class. My father had never met a celebrity. So you take this small town Appalachian coal miner, you know, from Southeast Kentucky, and he's never really gotten out until he's come down to Florida to visit me and actually seen most of what this amazing country has to offer. And I say that with most respect to my father because he's such an amazing man. And so having my dad have that childlike glimmer in his eye when he was getting ready to meet one of his childhood. And this was all spawned from me. This was my idea because I was like, Dad, how cool would it be if me and you got together and we had a picture with Bill Shatner and you introduced me to Star Trek and I'm introducing my wife and other people to Star Trek. And this is the man, literally the face of the USS Enterprise 1701. And it's just like, boom, it was amazing.
That's just incredible. And you guys are going to have that memory forever.
Forever.
To cherish.
Yeah. And so... It was really awesome. And MegaCon was such a cool venue and one of the most, dare I say it, it was one of the most organized ones that when I went to Orlando a couple years ago, met Stan Lee and Norman Reedus, it was kind of a little bit unorganized. And we had to stand in line for like 3.5-4 hours to see Stan Lee. So that really wasn't fun. Four hours.
Speaking of Stan Lee, you said that you saw him zoom by while you were there.
There was,
right?
And of course, I've met Stan Lee and I've got his autograph and everything. But you know, having a glimpse of the legend is just enough to make your heart flutter. It made mine. But he was getting ready to go to his signing table, and they had this whole area called the Stan Lee Zone set up at MegaCon Tampa Bay, And of course, there he was. He wheeled by on his little power scooter. And the next thing you know, there's Stan Lee signing autographs. So it's so awesome that we got to have that experience. But joining us here, hey, what's up, Michael? How are you?
Perfect timing.
Perfect. I do what I can. Man, you were like on point with the timing, dude.
Hey, you invite me here, I'm not going to make you wait. So,
all right. Well, you know what? Our host is here. We're going to go ahead and roll his intro. You guys sit back and sit right there. We'll be right back with Retro Blasting and Michael. So don't go nowhere, all right? So that was the Retro Blasting official intro, and we want to thank Mr. Michael for sending that over to us and so we could play here. And on the screen, there he is, the one, the only Mike, Mike Ippolito from Atlanta, and Michael from Northern Atlanta. Is it Northern Atlanta now?
There are many of us Michaels out there.
There's so many Michaels in Atlanta. Is there a Michael Bolton up there? No. I'm just messing.
I haven't seen so much blondness up here in a while, so I'm not sure.
Okay. Oh man! So welcome back. Of course, you were on one of our earlier podcasts when PopX was just initially on the brink. We were like in our infancy stage, and
we were.
I had told you this earlier in the week when we done a little test run, but your podcast that we did here and Jordan Woods Robinson from The Walking Dead. I've literally been back and forth on the stats.
Top two.
So,
top two.
Yeah. So one week you'll be on the top, and then the next week, two or three downloads difference, Jordan's will be on the top. But man, you're one of our most downloaded podcasts. And when the opportunity came up for you to come back here on PopX, it was just like a no-brainer. It's like when we start talking retro toys, you know, an hour and 2 hours will pass, and we don't even know what's going on. So it's like this is going to
say that Retro Blasting is kind of like PopX royalty, perhaps?
I would consider him PopX royalty for sure.
Oh,
yeah, he's definitely won the title, fair and square. But you know, I'm gonna turn the steering wheel a little bit over to Mike because Mike actually met up with Retro Blasting crew over at Dragon Con in Atlanta just a couple of weeks ago, and so Mike, take it away, man.
Yeah, well, just appreciate you coming back on, and I'm going to start with this. This is that right there, and that's the extent of my childhood right there that I got left.
That's pretty dope, man.
That's an icon of Kenner Star Wars. I mean, that piece alone showed up in Poltergeist, I believe it may have appeared in E.T., but I know for a fact it was in Poltergeist. So. That's one of the seminal pieces of Kenner Star Wars.
Yeah.
Do you have anything in there, Mike?
Is
there anything
in there? Yes, actually, I do have some Darth Vader, Chewbacca in there, some old Kenner stuff.
I had to ask.
Not in the greatest shape because we played with our toys when we were younger, but.
Of course.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah, we weren't running out to buy plastic bubbles at Target. We were running out to buy the actual toys.
That's right.
Yeah. So.
But I just want to start with Dragon Con, which you know, your most recent con that you guys had attended, and I was there as well for a couple of the panels.
Yeah.
For those that don't really know Dragon Con, I guess it would be the East Coast equivalent of San Diego Comic Con.
Yeah.
I guess we consider that. You know, some of the panels you had was Transformers versus GoBots, Lightsabers Across the Galaxy. Neon is Half the Battle, G.I. Joe Jumps the Shark, Tomb of Yesteryear, and Indiana Jones and the Hilarious History.
Yep.
Nice.
And the two that I had attended was the Tombs of Yesteryear and the Indiana Jones.
Thank you.
And I just want to say it was just an amazing panel. You guys do amazing work, and you make the time go by so fast with the amount of information you put out. And, you know, I just want to know, like, once you know you're going to attend the con, you know, how far in advance and, you know, where do you come up with the topics that you want to talk about? So you had five panels, you know, and, you know, how long does it take to come up with all, you know, all these ideas and how long to put this presentation to make it run roughly an hour?
Yeah. Yeah. We come up with these ideas, and then we pitch them to the convention. So in the case of, the lightsabers panel, for example, that panel was pitched 2 years ago and we gave them like four different pitches and they chose something different. So then this year we came up with four more pitches for the Star Wars track and I put that one back in. There's an old story of Agatha Christie, the mystery novelist, and she had this description that she wanted to use in a book and her editor kept crossing it out and then saying that we don't like this description, move on and don't use it again. So then the next book she would write, she would put the description back in there. And then she'd be like, get it out. So finally, after like seven attempts at this, the editor just gave up and said, fine, you can put it in this book. So I was hoping that would be the case with the lightsaber panel, and it was. Nice. We got that one through. But once we are accepted, once some of our pitches are accepted, then we have to find out, okay, what days and times, are there going to be any conflicts? You know, because if we're doing one panel on the Star Wars programming track, but we're doing two panels on the sci-fi classics programming track, we have to let both parties know, mm-hmm. You know, so that they don't both schedules for 5 p.m. on Saturday. And then at that point, that usually takes place about, if we're lucky, 8 weeks out from the convention, which sounds like a lot of time, but it's really not, because A lot of panels, as you know, from going to conventions, and if I start over talking this, you guys just cut me off.
No, you go for it. This is good stuff.
Okay. So, thank you. a lot of panels, as you know, by going to conventions, because we've all been on both the guest side and the attendee side. They tend to be people who, they want to be on a panel, they want to be on a topic, and then they get up there and they just kind of riff. Now, if you get good experienced panelists, then you'll get a nice flow and you'll get some good charisma and interplay between the panelists. If you don't, then it becomes boredom for an hour. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I could be having this conversation at Applebee's with my friends. Why am I sitting here, you know, in front of this conversation in a seat? So what we do is a little different, as you know. We put together an entire presentation with multimedia and everything like that, and we want to provide infotainment. So what we start doing is we start researching the topic, and we assume that we know nothing. So even though I know a lot about Indiana Jones and I know a lot about lightsabers, I go in pretending I'm a novice and know nothing, aside from the names of the movies. And then I double-check all my facts. Mm-hmm. And then what I do is Melinda and I start building this presentation and finding the flow. So last year, for example, we did one called 80s Ninjas, and it was all about the 80s ninja fad and mm-hmm. how that unfurled. And I was midway through developing the structure, because you start with an outline and you find those beats that you have to hit because you want it to be funny. Because you want the people that choose to spend their hour with you to walk away feeling like that wasn't a waste of time. This was really
absolutely, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So what I found was, as I was developing the ninja panel, is that we had it one way. And then I was driving home one night from work and I thought, you know, I think it'd be better if I did it a different way. So I came home to Melinda and I said, look, I got to pitch you a different idea for the ninja panel. And she said, well, we're 4 weeks out. We've got, you know, three others to do. And I said, no, wait. I said, what we need to do is make this the journey to identify the ultimate 80s ninja. Not just go through the facts, but we need to build up the mythology of Storm Shadow. But every time, because he applies to all these different tropes of mm-hmm. the ultimate 80s ninja. But every time we bring up the image of Storm Shadow's ninja clan symbol, the red stripes, mm-hmm. we bring it up, and I'll immediately say, I'm not ready to talk about that. And then we'll move on. And she's like, oh, the audience will get mad. You know, and I said, no, it'll be great. And so we restructured that whole presentation, not at the last minute, but midway through, midstream. And it was a big hit with the audience because we kept hitting Storm Shadow, and then I wouldn't talk about it. And it kept building this momentum. And then finally, at the end, it's like, okay, now we're going to talk about Storm Shadow. And I was like, so.
Nice.
Yeah, so the way we build those is we find beats, and then our presentations generally end up being between 70 and 90 slides, depending on the topic.
Wow.
And each slide, some slides are video clips, some slides are just stills, some slides are, you know, GIFs, some slides are a little bit of text, but we keep our text minimum, 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 because we want people to be looking at the image while we're talking to the image, not reading off the slide. So anything that's text is usually a joke. You were there for the Indiana Jones panel, for example. Sometimes we go the extra mile, and we always go the extra mile, but I mean, in certain punctuation points, we put in things like, with example, the Raiders monkey. I was driving home, and a lot of my thinking happens during my commute. And I said, you know, I realized that Raiders of the Lost Ark, based on the monkey, gave us the whip and the nay-nay. So then I was I'm going to have to cut this together into a music video. So I cut that together, and so I say that, and then people are like, what? And they're laughing, and then I hit the button, and the video starts playing, and they're like, what? So kind of things that take that extra bit of time. But it's worth it, because the audience loves it, and like you said, they don't feel like they've been sitting there for 7 hours. They feel
that
like
that is really creative, dude. I got to give you props.
Awesome.
I mean, you're right though. I mean, people buy these tickets to come to these events, and you don't want them to just sit in a very boring 1 hour conversation about some guy bantering about his, you know, experience with some bad film company, or you know what I'm saying. And you want to be able to have something that's entertainment, makes people laugh, get them engaged, and maybe want them to come back to your next panel. So,
right.
Yeah, I get it. And
they're at these conventions to have a good time.
Absolutely. Yes. And exactly. You know, I honor that. And I got a question, you know, before we go into the next kind of topical thing, is there any chance that you guys ever go outside of your home base in Atlanta? Do you ever come down to like MegaCon or any SpookyCon, or do you do any of those?
We did a few years ago. We went all the way to Seattle, and we went to Pensacola. We went to St. Louis. We were bouncing all over the place. Problem was, and this is still true, is that I don't know when this happened. I feel like it was within the last 10 to 15 years. Don't quote me on that, but based on my convention going experience, I used to go to conventions, and there would be not just celebrity guests, but the panels themselves would be run by professionals. Wow. And those professionals would really be keyed in. So like the first fan panel that I ever went to was about Transformers. And it really spoiled me, because when I went in, it was these two guys, and they came in with a media cart. It was like 7 or 8 o'clock in the evening. And they looked at each other. They had great rapport. And they said, okay. And they turned on their projector and they said, okay, Bob, I hope this goes better than it did when we were in Houston last week. And
oh,
they
no.
go. Like, they were setting us up for that kind of camaraderie.
Yeah.
And it was the most entertaining, funny thing that I'd ever seen. And they had like a bottle of, I think it was Jolt Cola or something like that. And they said, okay, remember the rule now. Anytime someone accidentally mentions Beast Wars, you have to take a Jolt Cola. And, you know. And so, you know, by the end of it, one guy had screwed up so much, he was like in a sugar rush at that point. He was just like,
gosh.
But it was really funny, because they took us through the whole history of the Transformers franchise. And I walked away thinking, man, that was the best hour I've ever spent. It was better than any celebrity panel I'd ever been to. So then when I said, I'm going to go to all these fan panels, they're going to be great. Well, somewhere along the way, and they had indicated that they were asked to come to Dragon Con, the implication being is that they had been hired, right? Which I thought, that was a great hire, you know, bring them back, right? Well, the next few fan panels I went to in subsequent years, it was like, wait a second, maybe I was mistaken. And I guess my point in saying that is, I think a lot of these conventions, when you get the entertainment or the scheduling for free, you kind of get what you pay for. Unless the people who are behind it really have a passion, not only for the subject, but for the audience. You have to be keyed into both things. So like, I know for a fact that nobody's going to get up and take the time to be on a panel at a convention unless they're passionate about the subject they're talking about. Mm-hmm. But passion for Green Lantern doesn't translate into making the audience feel good about the hour they spent talking to you about Green Lantern.
Yeah.
There's a difference, you know?
Yeah.
It was comic book guy from The Simpsons running the panel, you know, and he's like, I believe that in issue 172, volume 2, that, you know, like that's not exactly the most engaging thing. So I tend to speculate that somewhere along the way, aside from celebrities, a lot of these conventions, because they had so much volunteer help, they just stopped hiring presentation professionals.
Mm.
Now everybody's kind of doing their own thing. We're fortunate in that the Sci-Fi Classics track that we do most of our work with at Dragon Con is excellent. But to answer your point about why we don't do the outside conventions anymore, it's not because we don't want to travel. It's because they don't compensate us for the travel, and that gets really...
I get it. Well, you know, you're always welcome to come to one of our local events in Orlando, which is only like 5 hours away. So you can come and do a really cool event at MegaCon or even MegaCon Tampa Bay. And I had really great experiences at both. I mean, really good panels and definitely right up your alley. And of course, all these cons these days are kind of starting to structure in the same formality, and which is a good thing. Organization, you know, and stuff like that. I've been to some cons that have been really bad organized. I've seen some panels that will just make you kind of cringe. You just want to, I got to go to the bathroom. Goodbye. You know, that kind of thing. So it would definitely be cool to have you in our home state and maybe document that as well. But
when is MegaCon?
MegaCon usually is in the end of May, and then they do a fall event right at the end of September. So so 1st of May is here in Orlando. And the last week in September is in Tampa Bay. So you get the best of both worlds twice a year.
Good deal.
So it's really cool. And I just went to MegaCon Tampa Bay just yesterday and got to meet. I met Bill Shatner and all that stuff. But so getting away from cons and let's start talking about 80s pop culture and stuff. So let's talk Voltron really briefly. And, you know, only – share what you want to share about this. I know this might be a little bit of a tender subject, but you know, since being on the show the last time, Voltron hadn't even aired yet on Netflix, and now we're going into season 4. And so, what are your thoughts on the progression and how it's come to pass?
I mean, I know there's a lot of people who love it. You can't ask for more than that. It is in the fourth season. I don't know how much of that is driven by. Because it's on Netflix, so there's not to reveal too much about myself, but I also happen to work in the cable industry as well. So we get a lot of information about, you know, the industry as far as the streaming services versus TV and things like that. And so one of the things that's kind of nebulous right now is what the actual, not ratings, I guess it is ratings, what the actual ratings of viewership are on streaming services. It's almost like trying to get Google to reveal, you know, its YouTube ad rates. You just really, they're not going to tell you, and they don't have to because there's no regulation yet. So clearly on some level, Netflix still finds this Voltron Legendary Defenders show to be viable. Otherwise they would have stopped it after, you know, one or two seasons. Yeah. I do like the fact that it's being done by people with anime roots because the original show was an anime, Beast King Go Lion, so that's always helpful. These are the guys I understand who did Attack on Titan, so that's a plus. From what I've seen, and I haven't seen much, I've only seen like the first two seasons. I haven't really been keeping up with it because we've been building our studio over this past year, so I've been a little behind. From what I've seen, I like the fact that the characters are still the characters. They seem to really appreciate the original source material. Mm-hmm. I'm not wild about the way the robot looks. I think he's got Popeye forearms and he's got a little bit of a, like, I don't know what you'd call him. It looks like a Lamborghini Countach with the doors left up. Like what? There's something a little like, yeah. I'm not wild about the robot. And so the toys haven't really drawn me in. But no, I'm glad that it's successful. I'm not directly affiliated with that anymore. DreamWorks, once they got the green light for the show and it was about to launch, they pretty much just took everything over. And that's the business, as they say. So that's cool.
Okay. You know? Well, yeah. You know, then that's all you need to say. I just wanted to get your thoughts on it and see, because I know last time we talked, you were really. We all were really excited to even see Voltron in any shape or form in the modern day era. That's really interesting.
They're backhanded. No matter how you feel about Legendary Defender, and again, I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other about it yet because I haven't seen all four seasons. Mm-hmm. I don't really like the robot's design. That's not a make or break thing. But because Voltron is now back in the limelight. We got that awesome Sola Chogokin from Bandai, which was the classic original Goliant. So I raced out to get that. And I'm glad that it's almost like when Indiana Jones 4 came out, I said to myself, well, this isn't really the greatest movie I've ever seen, but at least it prompted Hasbro to make the figures from all the other movies that we never got. Mm. So, hey, win.
Complete the set.
Well, Lindsay Badger, what do you got for Mr. Michael here?
Well, let's talk for a little bit about the 80s cartoons. With so many of the cartoons coming out on the DVD and the Blu-ray, and et cetera, which ones haven't you seen come out yet, but maybe you think they should?
Oh, yeah. Spiral Zone. Spiral Zone came out in a very limited, like you had to be part of an internet group to get that DVD set.
Wow.
It was a guy who worked on the show who had some of the broadcast tapes. He had the whole run. He had like copies of the broadcast tapes. And so he helped run off a series of DVDs. It was a limited box set that came out. Then that came and went. And then Spiral Zone has never been seen since. I got it on a torrent, so I was able to get it. But I know. But you know what? When they don't make it available, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Extreme measures.
That's right, especially because you're running a channel here and someone's going to want a Spiral Zone video at some point. Bionic 6 is still not officially on.
Bionic 6,
which would be bad because it had some of the best animation of the 80s. Mighty Orbots is not on DVD.
The Orbots. Yeah,
I know that was only 30 episodes, but the whole thing behind that one was that Tonka sued them because they felt that Orbots was too close to GoBots. So instead of going up to their lawyers, because Tonka had big lawyers, Mighty Orbots, which wasn't even anything like GoBots, was like, never mind, we'll just stop after one Saturday morning season. So they only did 13, but it was a great show. And I wish that was officially on DVD of some kind. I've attempted to buy it twice on a bootleg, and both bootlegs were glitchy and didn't work. So... Muppet Babies will never be on DVD. Reason is Disney.
That makes me so sad.
Yeah, and it's because Jim Henson had all these, he was such a lovable guy, he had all these sweetheart deals with all these other movie studios when he was making that show, so he was able to use all this music and all these clips, because remember the kids would imagine television shows. Well, that creates a licensing nightmare.
Yeah.
So the way to get that is on bootleg. Let me see. StarCom's on DVD now, finally. Sky Commanders is on DVD. I'm trying to think. I know there was another one I was trying. Oh, Bucky O'Hare is not on DVD here. It was released in Europe for a biscuit second, and now it's gone. And the problem with that is that even if you have a region-free DVD player like I do, when you get DVD-quality stuff from England, it's in PAL. And PAL format actually pitches everything up because of an electricity current thing. I don't know. It's a frame rate or something. And so, if you're watching a PAL DVD of Star Wars, everybody sounds slightly like a chipmunk. Just slightly. So I'm afraid that Bucky O'Hare would be that way as well. So I haven't pulled the trigger on an older DVD set from there. There's a number of them that aren't. And then the real problem is, the ones that have gone out of print aren't coming back into print. So those are worth a lot of money now, too, on the secondhand market. So Black Star from film 81. That's out of print. Captain Power and the Soldiers of the Future. That's not animation,
Captain
but
Power.
It's Power. That's that set is now worth a mint. Some of the older, I believe it's called BCI printings of She-Ra and He-Man. Now She-Ra and He-Man are still in circulation through Mill Creek, I believe. Mill Creek. But they say that the compression is not as good because they cram more episodes per disc with no extras. So the BCI versions had the beautiful menus with the beautiful boxes, and they had the special features. And so I don't know if I've answered your question sufficiently.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. You not only unpacked it, you sent it airmail next day. So that was freaking awesome.
And I'm really sad about the Muppet Babies because that was like one of my top five favorite.
But
kid
it does
movies.
Make sense. Disney acquired the Henson Studios early on, and it's such a freaking nightmare to even begin to unpack because there are so many like songs and clippets, even like things from other movies and franchises, and it was just like a hodgepodge, if you will. And
right, so until that inevitable moment, until that moment where Disney becomes the entertainment singularity that it will eventually.
Well, they do own the Star Wars, so we could at least watch that episode, right?
Maybe on torrent, but not in release.
All right, fine.
So. There is some hope. There is some hope with Muppet Babies because even though it's never probably going to be on an official disc, the cult of popularity around Henson and everything Disney and everything Star Wars and all those things, it means that there are some really nice bootleg sets out there you can get. And they've got printed discs and, you know, but now the quality varies from episode to episode because they were all scoured from various tapes that everybody shared. You can get them. I've got them.
Okay.
Well, I know that, you know, you were talking a little bit about some of the 80s action figures and stuff. Mike, I believe that you may have a question that talks about some of his restoration projects, right?
Yeah, just there's one other. I just want to touch on one other thing first. Going through some of your YouTube videos, it was something I had came across a video about a little project that you were involved in and also that you've made appearance in as well.
Oh, yeah.
Star Wars Revisited.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know where you want me to start. So to explain the photo that Michael has just posted.
This is crazy.
We're going to take the Wayback Machine to 2006.
Okay.
And I was Clark Kent thing at a daily newspaper, literally. Like I was a city reporter at a daily newspaper here in Atlanta area. And in my off time, which I didn't have much of, I was looking at this website called originaltrilogy.com. They were a message board, and their initial intent was to preserve the original theatrical editions of Star Wars for all time, because George Lucas had said, we're never bringing out those again. They're only going to be the special editions. So these guys were like, and digitizing laser discs, and they were trying to clean them up, and they were doing all this stuff. Well, slowly, the message board continued to expand because what some guys wanted to do, and ladies, was they wanted to take the source material from the current DVDs, at the time it was DVD, there was no Blu-ray, and use it as a basis for editing back together the original theatrical cuts in the best quality possible. Okay. So rather than just having Laserdisc dub, which is inferior, almost little better than VHS quality, they wanted to use as much footage from the DVD as they could and then just drop in the bits from the Laserdisc that they needed to patch everything together.
Wow.
So that became sort of a fan, they called them officially fan edits at that point. There was a new section.
Okay.
And I wasn't big on fan films. I've never been big on fan films, which are original works, you know, based in the Star Trek universe and Star Wars universe. I'm not that big. Those, but the fan edits thing was kind of intriguing me, and there was this message board that had popped up, and I didn't get to go on there every day. This message board subject popped up and said Adiwan's Star Wars Revisited progress thread, and I was like, what is this? I got to see this. And so I went in there, and I started looking around, and he said, new clip. I've posted a new clip for everybody to see. And I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. So I downloaded the clip and I played it, and it was the scene of Han and Luke and Leia escaping from the Death Star and the Falcon. Okay. And I was like, okay. And the colors just popped out at me because the special editions, I don't know if you've ever noticed, but they're way oversaturated. Mm-hmm. Like they dialed up the color like big time. It's like the Crayola Crayon 128 box or whatever it is. And it's just like, and they're not indicative of what they used to look like. I mean, the Star Wars trilogy back in the 80s looked more uniform and understated. Not like Zack Snyder, you know, monochrome or anything like that, but they looked well. And he had fixed all the color. Well, then the Falcon gets away and they find out that the TIE fighters are following them. I'm just watching it because I'm like, wow, the colors are pretty. You know, this is okay. And then the next thing I know, they're in the battle. And when they're in the battle, all of a sudden I notice that, wait a second, TIE fighter is coming in, POV, in the cockpit over the Falcon. The TIE fighter is shooting, as it did in the movie. But the Falcon is firing back, which wasn't in the movie because the special effects were so primitive back then and they didn't know how to do all this stuff that they limited the visuals because they didn't have the budget technology. I'm like, and this was movie quality work. Like, this was unreal movie quality work.
Yeah.
So then suddenly there was a new shot. Like suddenly the Falcon was being swarmed by TIE fighters all over it. And it wasn't digital. Like these were models. I was like, how is he doing this? And I just freaked out. And so I got in touch with him and I said, look, man, I've never been a fan of fan edits. I've never been, but you are bringing me the Star Wars that I always wanted to see because I wasn't offended by the special edition. I'm not a purist.
Yeah.
I wanted to see special effects. I wanted to see better visuals. I wanted Star Wars to be fresh again. The problem, as we all know with the special edition, is that Lucas changed it tonally.
Yes.
So in crucial moments, Lucas changed the tone, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
So he didn't fix things that were broken, and he broke things that were already fixed.
Like just fine.
I agreed with that statement for sure.
Yeah. So I told him, I said, whatever you need, just let me know. Well, a few months later, he had a computer crash. Big computer crash, and he thought he had lost almost all the edits working on. And I said, he said, I'm asking for a donation. This was before Kickstarter and Patreon. This was before all that stuff. Back in the day, you know, before Kickstarter. And he was just taking donations where he could get them through PayPal. And I said, I was desperate and selfishly desperate because I was like, I want to see this edit. I want to see this Star Wars because it looks like it'll be everything I really ever wanted. And, I just told him, I said, he lives in England. And I said, look, tell me what the exchange rate is and then tell me what you need. I'm a reporter that has no time to do anything extracurricular. So the small amount of disposable income I did have, I was just willing to throw at this. And, he gave me a number. And I thought to myself right before I hit send on the PayPal, I said, you know, this could be a scam, but I said, if it is a scam, then it is the most inefficient scammer I've ever seen because he's gone to the lengths of putting together clips for a year to try and scam one guy out of a few hundred bucks. I was like, no, I'm just going to go all in. So I pushed all my chips into the middle of the table and I said, call. And about, he got him back on track real fast. And then about a year later, he was done with it. And when he got done with it, this was the cool part about it too, was that it wasn't just color correction and fixing a few things. He actually took observations from the community.
Mm-hmm.
So like on the message board, he said, hey, anybody who's ever noticed anything funky about anything in the Star Wars movie, let me know and I'll fix it. Like any technical glitch or flub or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so people were coming out of the woodwork with things that they'd noticed because we've all watched this movie a million times, but we all noticed different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so that he's like one guy wrote in and said, hey, I've noticed as Han tells Chewie in the detention block where he says, get behind me. And it cuts to that shot of Chewie and Chewie turns his head. The door to the elevator is over Chewie's shoulder. Well, that door in the next shot blows up and stormtroopers start coming through. But movies are shot out of sequence. And so the Chewie insert was shot after the door had already blown up and they just replastered it and then repainted it. So you can see, especially on Blu-ray now, you can on the official DVD or official Blu-ray, you can see this big patch hole in the door that's been plastered over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and with his digital brilliance, he just went and he just fixed it. it's gone. It's just like, okay, that's correct now. That's wow. In continuity. And one guy noticed that they reused the establishing shot of the little control room where 3PO and R2 hide in the closet. They reused that twice, or by European followers. They reused that twice. So what he did was he said, hey, I've noticed that Han Solo, before they leave, he puts his small blaster in his stormtrooper holster, and then he grabs one of those rifles off the rack by the window. But then when the stormtroopers break into the room later, when 3PO and R2 are in the closet, that same establishing shot shows a full rifle rack. He deleted one rifle from the rack. So
continuity.
Then this one guy on the message board, this is my favorite story, and I'll shut up. This one guy, he told Adiwan that, he said, you know, sometimes when you're looking out the docking bay windows on the Death Star, sometimes you can see the star fields, sometimes you can't, sometimes they're moving, sometimes they're not, and it's never consistent. And so the fans all got together, and they determined what, from exterior shots of the Death Star, what direction it rotated in at what speed. And then Adiwan made sure that there were star fields back there that were always rotating consistently on the perspective wow. of the shots. It is incredible. And the what? Thing is, these things don't call themselves out. Like, they're movie quality effects that you would never notice. He matched them to the aesthetic of the original movie, aside from any special edition stuff he might have left in. So, like, he left in the enhancements and the X-Wing battle. He left in some of the expanded Mos Eisley. He took out the droids doing the Three Stooges thing. He took out the Jawa falling off the big lizard for mm-hmm. laughs. He took all that stuff out. But he left the broader palette, the broader canvas of Mos Eisley. But my point in saying this is that you would never notice a lot of these effects. So he added a pop-up video feature to the final video menu. So you can actually watch it as a pop-up video, and it'll point out everything in every scene that he fixed. Like, all the way down to, this is amazing. You ever notice that Aunt Beru, her voice is dubbed?
Yes.
Her voice
is, I have noticed yes. that, yeah.
I don't know the full story on this, but in England, when the movie premiered, I guess they had slightly different prints early on or something like that, because all the prints were different. The 70mm was different from the 35mm. The audio tracks were all different, which is why some of the lines in the special edition differ from the ones we grew up with in the 80s, like little lines.
Right.
Went in and he, through sources, through original trilogy, he knew people who were collectors of film prints and stuff. He found the prints that had Aunt Beru's original voice, which is British.
And he synced
it back up so it no longer looks like a bad dub. Like, she's actually, it's her real voice. And it works so well because she wasn't a bad actress. I don't know why they changed her voice. It just made everything feel weird.
Well,
so,
most of the actors on Star Wars anyway have. I'm getting like crazy feedback. Hello? Hello? Hello, Tess? Anyway, most of them are British anyway. So it's just like, why would you take out the original actress's voice? Right. That's weird. That's a weird call on my end, but. There's several questions that we have over in the chat room. Like Timothy over in the chat is asking, like, how did they change the award ceremony besides Michael's face being inserted? Is there anything else that they added in that one?
Yeah, they gave Chewbacca a medal.
He didn't have a medal. Kidding. That's right.
Chewbacca never got a medal. And Adiwan, through this brilliant sleight of hand, Princess Leia, you see her, like, it's like she gives the medal to Han. And then you see Luke waiting, and he looks over at R2, and he's like, you know, he does that thing where, don't worry, I'm nervous, but I'm about to get my medal. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, flips in an additional shot off to the right, like, cuts back over Mark Hamill's shoulder, and you see her getting another medal and reaching up like this, and you don't know what it's all about, but it doesn't look unnatural. And then all of a sudden, it cuts to Mark, and Luke gets the medal, and then it cuts the wide, and Chewie's got a medal, and Han's got a medal, and Luke has a medal.
Cool.
That's one thing I always did notice is, like, why would Han and Luke get a medal, but Chewbacca was there the entire time and wasn't awarded properly? That's like, seriously, guys, who are the ad wizards that come up with that one? I mean, but, yeah. So I want to actually cut right now and talk about your displays. Now, are you ready? Are you going to show, or is that something that is impossible?
I have the program right here. Let me just
okay. So basically, if you look over Michael's right shoulder, you'll notice in the back, in a well-lit room, are multiple, basically multiple cases that are ready to be displayed, and it has all of his entire collections that he's restored over the time. So I want to just give it to you, Michael, and let you narrate this next part.
I tried. I guess the Motorola Android is just not up to the challenge of doing this.
It's all right, man. I didn't want to put you out too much. I mean,
I really want to show you the studio.
I really want to see it too. So, Lindsay, do you have another question you can ask in the meantime?
Well, while we're rebooting the device, let's talk about some trends that are going on currently, or nice. Some hot items that you've been seeing fly through.
So what's hot right now in the con world?
What's going on?
In the con world or in the...
Just everything. World? When people go and buy something or are looking for toys that are current, what are the things right now that you have seen that are hot?
What's on the most wanted list?
The most wanted list. God. Retro toys, go.
Well, for current toys, the hot stuff right now is Last Jedi. Everyone's talking about trying to get all the different Last Jedi stuff.
Okay.
And you know, that's to be expected. As far as retro toys are concerned, prices on vintage Star Wars are really shooting through the roof because Disney has made Star Wars so retro-tied at this point.
Gotcha.
And Hasbro isn't putting out a variety of things that they used to, so people are trying to fill the gaps in their modern collections by buying the vintage items that are represented in the Disney movies that never got made.
Yeah. Mikey, so, hang on to that toy over there.
Yeah.
other retro properties are starting to go up in value. I know that Silverhawks is starting to go up. Some of them have always been valuable, but now they're more collectors in the marketplace, yeah. So they're more competitive, like real Ghostbusters and Filmation's Ghostbusters are continuing to be popular.
I've noticed that Dick Tracy and some of the toy biz, old school Marvel toy biz, have actually started to increase in price as well.
Marvel toy biz is finally starting to go up. Mm-hmm. I know that the Batman toy biz, I was looking for the Batman toy biz Bat King the other day because it's that and Bob are the two things I don't have. And suddenly I was like, wait a second, when did the Boy Biz Batcave go over $100? When did that happen? And it happened. Oh. And it's like 125, wow. 150. Yeah. Loose complete. I only collect loose, so I'm quoting you loose prices. And then I also noticed these are always expensive, so this isn't anything new, but I just have to say it because I recently completed my Wave 1 collection of these, is Generation 1 Transformers. They're always high, and I was having to grab them when I say not the mini cons. Like, okay, I'll give you a mini con example. So the mini cons like Bumblebee and Cliffjumper,
mm-hmm.
those are now, if you do pre-rub, which means you don't have that stupid thermal sticker, you have the original symbol, right?
All right.
The deer after those little rub signs, which I thought was, even as a kid, I was like, this is dumb. With the original logos, the little Bumblebee is like $50 and up.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
and Cliffjumper got the same. Like, they're all, you know, $50 to $60 and up. And then the larger ones, like Wheeljack and Jazz, they vary depending on how fragile they were and also how popular of a character they were. So, for example, Jazz is one of the most expensive. Wheeljack with his little two-piece spoiler on the back is very expensive. Megatron is always hard to get. Starscream, you'll pay. Well, I take that back. They're not hard to get. They're hard to get cheap.
that's the key word. Yeah. Right,
and especially if you want it in good condition or, dare I say, unopened in the box, you're probably going to pay pretty good for it. So.
And I remember that we were talking a little bit last time you were here about how popular and how sought after it is. And you said that they're always still pretty consistent on the wanted list.
Yeah.
Yep. And now GoBots are finally starting to go up.
GoBots.
Which is weird. Because GoBots used to be, you know, the black sheep of transforming robots. They were the underdog. And now there's a lot of interest in those. So the bad guy's base, it's called Thruster, blue jet that goes through space. That playset, I'm not kidding. Like 3 years ago, I could get that play set with the box complete with an unused sticker sheet for $25. And now I can't even find a complete one on eBay at all, let alone find one for less than 80, 90. Wow. I mean, it's happened really fast, like overnight. So These things are, something has caught the notice of the rest of our generation. I don't know if it's because we on the internet have hyped it too much and we've gotten all the sports guys back into toys. I don't know. I'm just saying.
Well, you know, I think when you're dealing with retro toys, I mean, look at all of us here in this window right now. We all are pretty much a product of the 80s in some shape or form. And so this huge generation here has an appreciation, a deeper respect for their past than I think most previous generations did. And so I think, you know, growing up in the 80s was such a great time for me. I have so many great connections and memories. And when I see these old toys, it immediately takes me back to a very special moment and place in my life. So, you know, in quick, just kind of tell us about what you built back there and why it's special to you. Because I know you've told us before the show what all's back there, but I want to hear it from your mouth.
I can send you right now. I can send Michael. He can post this during the show. I just took this photo a few seconds ago.
Okay.
And just
send it to my PopX email, and we'll pop it up on here.
Okay. I don't know which one that's going to. So both of you watch for it.
Okay.
I just sent. It'll give people a sort of an idea. Okay. But what we did was we needed a better space because we've been doing this for 5.5 years. And we were going through this scenario, this ritual that we were getting sick of, where we would start a video and then we would do the script. And in the script, it wasn't just the one toy line we're talking about. We're also talking about referencing other toy lines. So when we did that, we were like, well, every time we need to get, like, let's say for Dick Tracy, for example, we were doing the Dick Tracy video and we wanted to show the Ninja Turtles figures because they were from the same company from just a year or two before. Well, you'd have to go what we call bin diving for those.
Oh, boy.
Because they would be in these stack of boxes. It looked like the last shot of Raiders of the Lost Ark. It was in this big warehouse. You know, calling in, we'd be like, well, we got to figure out where those are. I think they're in box. That one, let's see, and it would take us an extra hour to find the stuff.
What?
We've just got the picture up here, and that is insane.
You've got LED lighting in those things?
That is so cool. It's like literally walking into a museum.
It's like IKEA threw up the 80s in there.
Now, here's the thing. So, just to give you some perspective on this photograph.
Wow.
I took the photograph from... that way over there. So right there and facing this way.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
I was turned 180 degrees. There's another room that's also right. So there's another room. Now it's not wall to wall like this, but it's because of its configuration. But that other room will house the aircraft carrier and all the G.I. Joe stuff in it. So you'll notice this room doesn't have any G.I. Joe. The G.I. Joe stuff has its own room, 180 degrees. So we needed a space to reduce our production time. So remember how Mr. Rogers, he'd have like shelf of dioramas and he'd go over to it.
Yeah.
That was our idea. Our idea was we need to be able to go into this room from the studio and grab whatever we needed quick and then bring it in there so we didn't have to hunt for it. And so we needed a museum-style environment to do that. And so that's what we created. And that's what's taken us the better part of 2017 to finish out. Because the basement itself that I'm sitting in right now, I'm sitting in the studio, it was unfinished. So we had to finish the basement last year through March of this year and then put in all the cabinets and put in all the cases and Michael, get out all the toys.
Michael, that is a thing of beauty, my friend. I mean, I'm looking at this picture and I'm seeing, oh my God, I'm seeing the Ghostbusters firehouse. I'm seeing Mask Boulder Mountain. I'm seeing the AT-ATs. I mean, it's just like, oh my God, my childhood. I want a sleeping bag right in the middle of that room. And I just want to sleep in that room for one night just to soak in the nostalgia. I mean,
well, you wouldn't have to sleep in the the sleeping bag, because if you turn 180 degrees from there and you look the other way down this long area on the opposite wall of one you're seeing, this is the one with Boulder Hill, the opposite wall, there is a two-seat auto-reclining Lazy Boy console theater couch. And then there is a set.
Oh, I'm done.
There's a 75-inch Sony 4K TV that I review all the cartoons and stuff on.
Oh, God. For,
so the whole studio is a one-stop shop. You come down here and you can do it all.
Wow.
So you could kick back, you know, with a blanket and the Lazy Boy and, you know, chill.
You know, I'll be going through Atlanta on Friday, right? I mean, my wife and I are vacationing up in Tennessee, and so I mean, if you need about 2 or 3 hours of just nerdiness, I mean, my people call your people, we'll work something out.
I think somebody might want to come by and play with some toys.
I don't want to play. I just want to sit and soak it in. I mean, because I mean,
it's I'm so looking, much awesomeness.
I was able to retain some of my childhood. And some of the things that I actually saw and grew up with, like some of my Masters of the Universe figures, some of my old Mask figures, and I actually kept them, but I didn't keep a lot of the play sets, and I don't even know where they went. And, you know, when I'm sitting here I see that Mask Boulder Mountain, I see many evenings of myself just playing in my room and just being so joyful. It is just, there's a lot of good memories tied to these as pieces of plastic that are just timeless treasures in my mind. And you've done here in restoring all of these to their original, condition, it's mind blowing, dude. It really is freaking mind blowing, and it's just hats off.
Thank you. What I like about this collection the most is that it is not. Obviously, it's cool to have a lot of these toys. I didn't have all these growing up, okay? I wasn't that kid with the lollipop and the Pellegrini. Okay? Like, I didn't have all this stuff growing up. But it was that I was that into this stuff growing up. You know, my dad wanted me to get into sports and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, this is not a good thing. He didn't understand that I was already into what I was into. So I hunted down the rest of the stuff later. And my parents, at one point... very briefly, at one point, tried to actively dissuade me from buying more toys. Like, they thought I had grown out of them, or I should be grown out of them, and now they're totally cool with it because they see that it's my passion. And, But the cool thing about these toys is that the core of them are my childhood toys from various lines, and then I filled in all the holes. And I'm continuing to fill in holes. I don't have everything, and I don't have room to display everything. So, like, for example, I have a storage room right there that has all the stuff I can't display. So like the Mego Star Trek bridge, the Mego Buck Rogers Starfighter Command Center. Like there are things that I don't have room for. The Sektar's Hive playset.
I'm not seeing any Masters of the Universe in there anywhere either.
Masters of the Universe is actually, if you look on the right side,
okay,
if you go up the top, past the Terror Drome, you'll see Point Dread.
I knew that was a
Pterodrome. I saw the Pterodrome,
Technodrome.
Technodrome.
Pterodrome is actually 180 degrees the other way in this G.I. Joe room. You'll see Castle Grayskull, Snake Mountain, and then the first shelf underneath the top is the core of Masters of the Universe, because I had to start figuring out what shelves to devote to what properties.
Yeah.
So I had so much Masters of the Universe, I could have filled an entire case with it. Then I wouldn't have been able to get other things represented in the museum.
Right.
So I picked out the ones that I thought were the best and most iconic. And then I also put Scareglow in there just because he's Scareglow.
Yeah.
It's cool because all these toys have a story. So like some of these toys are actually from other people's childhood collections and they just wanted to donate them. Wow. So like that Boulder actually donated from Chris Rissmiller's collection. He donated his whole Mask collection to us like 4 years ago. I don't know why he wanted to, and he just wanted to have a good home. He didn't want to sell them to a stranger on eBay. I didn't know the guy before I started retroblasting. He just called me up. And then some of them have like little repairs that I've done. So like my G.I. Joe Night Raven, it still has that little repair that I did to its front landing gear. So you know, your OCD collector might come in there and say, oh, well, that's not an original landing gear mechanism. And I'd be like, well, it works and it's better and it's mine and I love it. So
that's all that matters.
Yeah.
Wow, man. And you know, we're running out of time, but man, I tell you, this has been truly an amazing conversation, and just being able to have a little glimpse inside your inner sanctum here has truly been all inspiring, for the lack of a better term. So
yeah,
we sincerely thank you, man.
I think you should add on a girls' room, because I don't see any Cabbage Patch dolls or Barbies.
I have something that's going to make you very happy. So Melinda has a case just like this, one of these glass cases. She has it up in her office upstairs, and it's filled with her My Little Ponies.
What about Popples?
She has a Popple, but she doesn't have it on display. It's with her other stuff in a bin.
Yes. Okay.
All right. That's passable.
See, you got to give some props to the retro girls too. We had some cool stuff.
Absolutely.
No, we're trying to get the whole strawberry shortcake collection.
Yes. Because
the Kenner strawberry shortcake collection was impressive. Like the strawberry short house that was sold. We have the old Christmas catalogs.
The dolls that have the hair that smells so good. Mm. Oh my goodness.
Actually, at the time it retailed, it cost more than the aircraft carrier for G.I. Joe.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Quickly, I wanted to ask, is there anything that you have in your collection or that you want for the collection that you just can't find, that you just desperate to have?
Like an in search of?
Yeah. The Filmation Ghostbusters had an amazing playset called the Ghost Command Center, which was based on the house from the cartoon. That's extremely rare and hard to find. And it's one of those ones that when you find it, it's usually incomplete. And when you do find it incomplete, I walk away, because it's not one where you can put two or three together, because you're never going to find another one. So I just wait, because eventually, sometime in my life, maybe by the time I turn 50, one will pop up and then I'll be able to buy it. But it's things like that. I'm fortunate in that it's now down to the small stuff, but some of the small stuff is very expensive. So like there are certain lines I don't have. Like there was actually an action figure line for Stallone's movie Over the Top, the arm wrestling movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very expensive because they were so rare. So things like that, you know, are hard to get, and I'm trying to suck it up and just take the leap and just start doing.
Mm-hmm. Got you.
You got to strike when the time is right.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
That's right.
Well, man, I really do appreciate you coming back for a second round. And as always, I literally need to go back and listen to everything you said, because it's just a wealth of information. And Timothy Ward over in the YouTube live chat room said that the reason the guy donated all that mask stuff to you is because there would be no better caretaker than you. That's what he said. True. So, and then if you think about it, he's right. So,
I got to give a shout out to Timothy Ward before we go. He's the guy that sent me his R5D4 to restore.
Really?
And so he's the guy that owns that R5D4. He's a great guy. And he's been a good friend to Retroblasting for a long time. So thanks.
Well, Tim Ward is actually hanging out with the PopX crew. So now he's a good friend with PopX. So.
Yes, thanks for hanging out with us.
But anything you want to say in closing? How can people find you? How can we connect with you? How can we get involved in one of your panels at a con? So,
You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/retroblasting, I think that's correct, and then youtube.com/retroblasting. That's our big hub, youtube.com/retroblasting. We also have retroblasting.com if you just want to follow. We keep everybody up to date with our videos there, but it's more like a blog. It's just a video blog. And then we're also on Instagram and Twitter. So
okay.
You can find us there.
Awesome. And so
I just want to say thank you very much for coming back. And I look forward to seeing more videos, and the best to Melinda as well.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, by the way, Michael, here's the watch.
Oh,
yes.
That's the Dick Tracy watch.
Dick Tracy watch.
Yeah.
Bring that a little bit closer to the camera, shall we?
Oh, yes.
My God.
So pretty.
And that's handmade, so, right? That's handcrafted.
They were designed by Nick Mathis, and then he found a company that could replicate his design on a jewelry grade quality watch. So it's not a toy. It's not plastic.
That's it's an metal. Actual watch. And is that an actual speaker? Is that a speaker there?
A speaker grill, but he's working on a second edition for next year that will be Bluetooth enabled. So this right now is just an aesthetically accurate watch. He will have one next year that will actually tie into your smartphone, and you can then.
Oh my God! My way.
Oh yeah. My goodness!
That's pretty awesome.
I'm done now.
Okay. Yeah. It just keeps unraveling like
it's
constantly.
Never ending.
The fabric of time.
I absolutely adore it.
Yeah, your neurons are firing in the fabric of time, and it's quite glorious, if I do say so myself. But
you guys invited me.
But thanks, man, for hanging out with us, and hopefully we'll catch you at a con or in real life soon. And if whatever we can do here at PopX, man, just let us know if you got any projects going on. We want to help promote you because we just love everything that you're doing. And Aunt Melinda as well, you guys are just so freaking awesome.
We do what we can, and thank you for the support. We appreciate it.
All right, man. So thanks for catching me. I'm going to go ahead and click off on you if that's all right, and we're going to wrap the show up. But everybody say peace to Mr. Michael from Retro Guys.
Bye, Michael.
All right. Yeah. That guy is so awesome. I'm telling you. Holy cow. That was a lot. I'm going to have to go back and listen to this podcast.
There's a reason why we keep having him come back, because there's so much that he knows in that noggin of his that he can share. It's so wonderful. Always a treat.
That was beautiful. Well, anyways, we're going to go ahead and wrap this thing up, and we hope you've enjoyed this extended hour and a half podcast. We knew it was going to be extended. We knew it was going to be long, but we just are overjoyed by it. So, and as always,
we didn't want to cut any awesomeness out.
Yes, absolutely. So as if you see something exciting on the shelves at your local comic book shop or in the theaters and around geek culture in general, let us know on social media with your hashtag YoPopX. And if you use the hashtag, we could use your post on a future episode of PopX Live. So if you are going to a con, if you're going to some kind of cool event, take a couple of pictures of what's going on and hashtag it.
I have an idea.
Sure.
For a follow-up. If you have vintage toys, take a picture, use the hashtag, shoot them over to us, and let's show off some of our awesome retro
on our next episode. Do it.
Yes.
Awesome. And also, we're a part of an amazing network called the Gonna Geek Network. For all things more geeky, head on over to GonnaGeek.com and check out some amazing podcasts from our home network.
That's right. And you can also check us out on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, and Pinterest, all at PopXCast. And you can send any comments or suggestions using our email address at popxcast@gmail.com. And for future and past shows, visit our official website, www.popxcast.com.
Mm-hmm. And Lindsay, how can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me, Lindsay Badger, at LR Badger, all over the internet.
And you know what? You actually can't find Mike Ippolito all over the internet. Did you know that? He is like the ghost. He's like Neo in the Matrix.
He is a rare treasure to be.
You can only find him at 9 p.m. on Sunday nights at PopX. It's the only time you can find him. He's a ghost.
It's a rarity. It's a true treat.
And I am Joseph Burke, and you can find me at Joseph Burke Arts. That's JOSEPHBURKEARTS. All over the internet. And of course, hats off to my amazing team PopX that just continues to just rock it out each and every episode. Miss Lindsay Badger, you are awesome. And Mike Ippolito over here in the slide window for setting up Retro Blasting this week. You are awesome as well. So thank you, Mike.
And Joe, you're awesome as well.
Oh, stop it. did you see how I popped the shirt? I didn't pop the collar, I popped the shirt. So
you did,
that's all I got. Anyway. So that's it from this episode of PopX Cast. Join us next time for episode number 64 as we dive into the world of Blade Runner. And that is old versus new. Now, we're going to do this really cool. Blade Runner comes out this week, okay? So make sure you go, if you can, go opening night on October the 5th. But it opens worldwide in theaters on, well, in the U.S. at least, on October the 6th, this Friday. So Blade Runner is an amazing film. If you haven't seen the first one, or you've saw it and you haven't seen it in a long time, make sure you refresh. You go watch it this week, and then you go enjoy Blade Runner 2049. And you come back here on October the 22nd. I know, it's a week later. I'm sorry. I'm going to be on vacation next weekend. But come back here on October the 22nd as we dissect both Blade Runners from 82 to 2017. It's going to be awesome. So
I'm excited. I've already got the babysitter locked in. Let's do this.
You got the babysitter locked in?
I do.
Okay. Well, from all of us here at PopXcast, thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. And we will see you next time right here on PopX. We're going to roll that beautiful outro. Later.
From everyone at PopXcast, thanks for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe for more great content. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, all at PopXcast. Get your geek on.